One of the ironies of America's latest argument over guns is that while the debate is never resolved, the talk never really seems to change anything. The subject of the debate, guns themselves, are always definitive. When the trigger is pulled, things change. People pay attention. People are injured. People die. This is just as true if you are a gun-toting macho hunter with a rifle in your rearview, a would-be Boy Scout Army Ranger, or someone who wants little or nothing to do with guns. Whatever your individual gun story, when a gun fires, that becomes the story. Bruce Holbert grew up in eastern Washington State and learned this lesson just as his childhood ended. In fact, the story he tells to his high school students today is how his childhood ended forever at the exact moment he once pulled the trigger of a gun. How all of America's various gun mythologies and mystiques miss this very simple truth about guns is what Holbert says gets lost in the national gun debate.
I think that the gun debate is far more complex for people who live in the country I live in and other parts of the country where guns are a tremendous part of our mythos and how we grow up. And I think sometimes in the black and white world of politics, sometimes that gets lost. I think that what people don't realize is part of what connects people to guns out here in the West has to do with this idea of not just should we protect ourselves or do we need to protect ourselves, but who we are and how we live our lives and how we connect to the past.
And for you, that mythos, that kind of image of being good with a gun, knowing how to use a gun, having access to guns, a mythos that you grew up with, that vanished in an instant. Can you tell that story?
Yeah, I was 22 years old at an event called the OMAC Stampede, and a friend of mine, college roommate, offered me his pistol to have a look at because he was an internship with the county police department there, and he gave me the gun, and I looked at it. I thought I'd check to see whether it was loaded or not, but my familiarity with handguns was nowhere near my familiarity with rifles, and I made an assumption that caused me to fire the gun and kill him. And obviously my life changed forever. And so did a whole bunch of other people's lives. And
one of the things you tell in this story for the New York Times is all about how that instant that you can't take back. Take me right into that instant that you understand what has just happened and you can't reverse it ever.
It's like falling into a hole and waiting until you hit bottom. And bottom takes a long time to hit. I mean, you just keep falling further and further into it. I remember at first not being able to believe it, and I know that sounds familiar or cliche, but for me, I guess, when I was in the police car and they were examining my friend and finally put a body bag over him, that was when I realized this is going to be my life from now on.
And he went from being your friend to being a dead person almost in an instant.
Yeah. Yeah. He said, I'm hit. And we were in a car. And another friend of mine ran in the house to call 911. But there was a moment there where neither my friend nor I nor the friend who went in to call 911, we just sat there. And it was a long moment. It was a shock. None of us could move.
And guns had been in your life from the moment you sort of looked up at your bedroom walls.
Yeah, I lived with my mom until I was 15, and then I moved in with my dad. And the only bedroom that he had left in the house, because he had remarried and had some stepchildren, the only bedroom that remained in the house when I went to move in with my dad was the room where he kept his guns. We called it the gun room. And he had a fairly significant number of guns there. They were all hunting rifles. I think he had a few pistols. But yeah, I lived there with a 5-point deer head over my bed for 2 years, I guess.
And with all of that, you can know about guns, what they smell like, what they feel like, how heavy they are, what they sound like, and yet you can miss this really basic fact that they're made to do kind of one thing.
In fact, I think it's easy to miss that fact because you live around them all the time. I think that as they become a sort of normal part of your day or a normal part of your idea of how the world works, it's certainly possible not to give them the respect as tools or machines that perform certain functions, and instead you invest them with the ideas of stories and the ideas of manhood. I think that part of what happened had to do with that. Somebody handed me a gun, and a person from where I live, it's only courteous to examine and admire that gun. And I did so without the care and knowledge of pistols in particular that was necessary to keep everybody safe. I mean, there are certain expectations of manhood where I live, and I was trying to follow through those expectations, but I didn't have the education and the care, to be honest. I wasn't careful enough.
How did those expectations manifest themselves as you were growing up? I mean, did you just sort of get it by osmosis? Did someone say, "You can't pick up a hunting rifle"?
No, I think it's more osmosis. You grow up, my dad took me hunting when I was fairly young, and you go to school, and this is before Columbine. Where I went to school, almost everybody who drove a car, it was a pickup, and almost every pickup had a gun rack in it, and almost every gun rack had a rifle in it. So, a lot of times people would, on their way home from school, they would hunt. I'm a high school teacher now, and I know I've got students who walk around acting like Clint Eastwood, even though they don't know who Clint Eastwood is.
Are you permitted to be scared of what a gun can do, even though you're a responsible gun user, or do you have to hide that?
I think I should have had the maturity to have been afraid. I think I should have been secure enough in who I was and that my existence was valid. And I wasn't sure of that because I felt a little awkward in the role of masculinity and I didn't want to get found out. I think that part of my behavior this instance was to overcompensate. I thought I knew more than I did, and I handled the gun in a way that I thought was safe, but I hadn't been around pistols much, and I was wrong.
You say your story has no ending. Do you still believe that?
Yeah, something like this, you live with it, but it doesn't ever go away. I think I've learned to put it in a place in my life where I can still enjoy the other benefits and wonders of marriage and having children. But I don't think I'll ever not think about it.
Do you own a gun now?
Yeah, I own two or three. They're guns that were given to me as gifts from my father or guns I've inherited. I don't use them, or not much anyway.
Bruce Hulbert, thanks so much.
Thank you for having me, John.
Bruce Hulbert is a writer and a high school teacher. He recently wrote an op-ed piece for our partner, the New York Times, called Sleeping with Guns.
At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing or
politics,
country music,
hockey,
sex. Of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.